Good afternoon. I'm going to talk about web dev. And just as a warning, this is not a tutorial for newbies. It's for experienced people which know what is web dev and know a bit about XML and are interested in this kind of technology. Okay, so let's start. So I've been working on web dev for several reasons recently. One of them, and probably the most important, it's a project from Enfold System, which is called Plone Desktop. Well, that's not the official name, but that's how we are calling it to this moment. And it's meant to integrate Plone and Zoop itself directly on the Windows desktop. So you can have a folder. So for example, you have web folders in Windows, but they are just a normal folder, which has no special features. And for Plone Desktop, we want to build a more tight integration where you can publish your documents with a right click and change properties, change workflow states, and do all this kind of stuff. So Zoop itself has had web dev for quite a long time, but it has always been treated like a second-class citizen, meant just for uploading content sporadically, and not quite used. And so for Plone, there's a lot of people coming to Plone from other technologies like PHP and some other content management systems. And it's very important for them to have a way of moving their existing content to Plone site. So this is called book loading of content because most of the time they have a big amount of content to load. And so there's a PLIP, which is a Plone improvement proposal. It's PLIP 44, which deals with exactly this problem. And our suggestion was to use a standard XML with no special modifications to load metadata. And for normal content, HTML and stuff like that, you can use just plain content without any modification. So for web dev and Zoop, the hooks were mostly there. Archetypes has some support for web dev. I think most of you know what Archetypes is. And it's very nice to follow the standards. So both web dev and XML are well-defined standards. The web dev has an RFC, which defines how clients should interact. And having this kind of definition makes it easier for other people to implement clients which talk the same language. And sometimes it can be a pain, but not most of the time. So web dev in Zoop, by default, exposes some properties that you have in your objects, but it just exposes stuff which is in the property sheet. By default, I don't know if you guys are from the time of this DMI, but it is a screen which we have in most of the objects, which has we can add fields and field values for them. So this is called a property sheet. And by default, Zoop has one property sheet, which just has a title. And this stuff was used a lot, and by the time I started using Zoop, and in fact was used as the main storage for metadata. But that was before the CMF, and now no one uses it anymore. And so the problem is that as no one uses property sheets and WebDAV relies on property sheets, it doesn't expose as much information as you could have. Zopen itself implements the WebDAV protocol to a good extent. It even has lock and prop find works quite nicely and almost passes the litmus test, which is a test framework can be found in webdev.org and tests most of the features that a webdev server should implement. I think the only test it doesn't pass completely is one which requires URLs and object IDs to support UTF-8 encoded characters. And in Zope3, that's going to be fixed probably because Zope3 by default tries to use Unicode as much as possible. So when you upload some piece of content to Zope, and if you don't have the CMF, Zope will try to guess what kind of file you're uploading and either create a HTML document or a plain file or maybe an image. But that's not quite easy to know what kind of object will be created because it's hard-coded inside the Zope implementation. And when the CMF came, it brought a content type registry, which is a tool inside the CMF site, where you can put some rules that control what kind of content gets created, depending on the MIME type of the file or the extension. And even the content type registry is underused and mostly forgotten. I don't think anyone which uses CMF or Plon has paid attention to this tool. But it's there, and it does its job quite well. And as I just say, even the CMF doesn't use improperty sheets, so it has a limited value to WebDAV. So one of the things that you are most interested in when uploading content to WebDAV is to control what kind of content would get created. So this is the job for the content type registry in the CMF side. The content type registry provides a hook for controlling what object gets created. And the default predicates are quite poor. They just rely on MIME type and the extension. And most tools that implement the WebDAV protocol don't even send the MIME type of the object you're uploading. So you may just as well upload an HTML file, and Zope may get an application octaextreme MIME type on the server. And then it will not work as you expect, because you know you are uploading an HTML file. But if the system you are using doesn't know what kind of file it is, Zope can guess either. And this content type registry is somewhat extensible. You can create your own rules, and you can register them, and people can use them. But as I just said, it doesn't look at the content. It just looks at the MIME type and extension. So we could try to add MIME type detection in the server based on the magic. Some files have a magic header that tell what the kind of that file is. And that's not exactly difficult to do, but it adds too much implicitness to the that adds even more implicitness to the process. So just let me go back for a second. One of the things we did for controlling content creation in an easier way was to add new kinds of rules which look inside the piece of content you are uploading. So if you use XML, for example, we can try to match certain tags or XML namespaces to a certain type of content. So you can define an XML format for uploading your metadata and configure the content type registry to create, for example, an article or a news update or some other kind of content you may have. And that's it for this. Importing and exporting. Another thing that users continually complain is about their how future-proof their data is. If you put your content in the ZODB, you know it's somewhat opaque storage. You can use normal tools to look at your content and retrieve it. You have to use Zope or some other tool you can, that you may create. But it doesn't need to be that way. We can create tools for exporting content in an easy way and in a standard format. So today, most new products rely on archetypes. And archetypes has a good thing, which is defining the schema for the piece of content you have. So when you have a schema and you can introspect it, you can know what kinds of fields you have and what are the names and what are the types. And that's a good thing because you can create tools that inspect this information you have about your content and export them in any format you want. And it doesn't need to do anything special, just use at the look at the definition. Archetypes has lots of content concepts from Zope 3, and the schema is one of them. So the future-proofness when you use archetypes is mostly ensured, because by the time Zope 3 comes out, for example, you could just map an archetypes schema to a Zope 3 schema and export your content, and it will be there. So, proceeding. One of the concepts that archetypes has is the concept of layers. So there are several layers that do different things. There is a storage layer, and there's a marshalling layer. And the marshalling layer, it's very underused. It's mainly used for web dev. And what it does is to transform the piece of content you have by looking at the schema, transforming a plain text file and sending it out through web dev. So there are two marshallers by default in archetypes. One is called the primary field marshaller, which just sends out the content of the primary field. A primary field, it's defined on the schema when you have a keyword called primary, which you pass to a field. And there's another one, which is the RFC-822 marshaller, which it's very similar to the way the CMF exports data through web dev. So one of the problems with this marshalling implementation in archetypes is that you can only have one marshaller at a time. So you wait to have it a primary field marshaller or an RFC-822 or some other meshlet that you can create. And it's quite easy to create yarn. It's just two methods and a very simple interface. So what we tried to do is to create a controlled marshaller, which can decide very the same way as the content type registry what kind of marshaller will be used for your content type. So you can, for example, decide that if you upload an XML file, it will use an XML marshaller. And if you upload a Word file, it will use a primary field marshaller. Or if you define your own format, you can use your own marshaller. And so the marshaller registry, which is in the Marshall product, which is available in the Enfold. No, it's in Archetypes, public repository. Provides the Marshall registry, which works much the same way as the content type registry. You add rules, which based on content type or some other information. You can even look at the file and decide which Marshall you want to use. There you go. Oh. One of the problems for the standard marshallers, like the RFC-82, is that they are too weak for structured data. So in archetypes, you have metadata, and you also have references. And those are complex objects which you can't easily map to a plain text format. So XML is the answer to that. You can have very complex structures expressed in XML. And when thinking about XML, we look at the existing libraries to see which one will provide the more features. And so there's Minidom, which is included by default in the Python, in any Python installation, and PyXML, which has a lot more features. And there's also libxml too. So look at them, and which one are you going to use? Okay, so Archetypes has a schema, and XML also has a schema. So what about using a schema definition to validate an XML file based on Archetypes? Well, why not? So this idea was given by Paul Everett. He's here. Oh, yes. Okay. And we try to define a RelaxNG schema, which matches as much as possible to an archetypes schema. And we use libxml2 because it can validate this file using the RelaxNG schema when you upload it. So if you create a file and you upload to archetypes and it's not well formatted or has a duplicate field or has an invalid type for some field, it will give you an error, and a very informative error, telling exactly what's the problem with that file. So for expressing references in this format, which we call ATXML, we talked about three different ways of expressing references. One is by UAD. As you know, any archetypes object can have a UAD, which uniquely identifies that object inside your site. Or you could use a path relative to where you are, or metadata. This idea of making reference by using metadata was given by the guy from Natalie. What's the name? I forgot now. Okay, so it's from the idea comes from RDF, where you mainly make references using metadata. So the RelaxNG schema, which we defined, also allowed for a recursive definition of the XML we have. And so for the metadata, you can include some of the values you will have for your destination object And when you upload that file to Archetypes, to your Zope site, using Archetypes, it will do a search in the catalog and try to match this metadata which you provided with an existing object. And if it finds an existing object, it will make the reference using the object UID. So for the future, one of the things that you can do is to have a RelaxNG schema generated from an archetypes schema. So you can validate each content type in a unique way. Because right now, this format which we defined, it's very generic. So it may not be able to validate all the field values that you may have. OK. So as I say at the beginning of the presentation, the web dev implementation in Zope uses property sheets for exposing properties of the objects. So it more or less works like this. You make a request asking for the properties of an object, and it goes and finds all the property sheets this object has, and lists the properties and their values and in different namespaces. And as CMF doesn't use property sheets, it's not possible to get at the values of, for example, Dublin car metadata. So by looking at Zope, we figure out that the dev namespace and prop find was also implemented by a virtual property sheet, which was not visible from Zope itself, but it's injected into the list of available property sheets when making a request for a prop find. So we use this feature to inject our own property sheets, which can expose any kind of property you want. And one of the virtual property sheets that we created exposes the Dublin car metadata for a CMF object. And to do that, we have to use some structured monkey patching. Because it was not easy to modify Zope itself to add this hook and get additional property sheets. But the idea is to submit a patch to the Zope collector and get this feature included in next release, and maybe even get the product itself added to the Zope repository. So for getting at these property sheets, which can be available in any content object, we created a property set registry, which this property set registry has the same pattern as the content type registry and the same as the Marshall registry. And familiar patterns have a better chance of surviving. So you can also add rules which decide if these properties will be available on your object based on any kind of rule you may create. You can decide based on the permission, maybe a tails expression, or anything that you can decide. And so we expose the Dublin car metadata by default. And you can expose any other info in namespace you may create. And okay, so we did also some improvements to devlib, which is a library by Greg Stein, and it's used quite a lot in your project. One of the features that we added was to have streaming of files when you upload them to the server. Because if you just send the file in one big blob, it uses a lot of memory and it can take some time. And you can't get any progress report from how the file is being uploaded, how much is left, how much was done. And a nice thing about devlib is that there's a PEP, which is PEP 268. that is proposing to add DevLib as to the standard Python library. And so we hope to get our improvements integrated in this in DevLib before it makes to the standard library. So where to next? All these features which we have created can be quite useful and upon site, but it wouldn't make sense if we don't make it future-proof. What about SOAP 3 comes along and people can ask, so what now? Can we use the same features? So the answer is yes. We hope to make all of these things into SOAP 3 at some point and make the transition as nice as possible. And another thing that could be done is to create an Nautilus plugin to make users on Linux and not just Windows have the same features. So you can imagine browsing a Plon site in Nautilus and right-clicking and getting a workflow menu and selecting publish. Oh, that's quite nice. And so I was trying to get Nautilus developers interested in that, but hadn't had much success. So if anyone is a GNOME programmer and wants to contact me. And growing the base. So another thing that could be added to this project is to have an archetypes predicate. So you have an archetype, you have a schema, why not expose it through WebDev? Well, we can, it's just created. And there's a Calendarium product in the collective, which also uses the parser, the iCalendar parser from the school tool project to create Plon objects when you upload an iCalendar file. So you have, if you have Apple iCal and you have this product installed in your Plon site, you can use the publish feature to upload the file to Plon and it will create a calendar and event objects inside this calendar folder. And one of the things you can do is to get this parser code and create a marshaller, which then, with, in conjunction with the controlled marshaller, can use it to do whatever you want. And if, of course, if you have to integrate with other systems, you may also want to follow other standards, which iCalendar is one of them. So, for the references, if you are interested in all those things, for webdev.org, there are lots of webdev-related content. The Python, the devlib is available on Greg Stein's web homepage. And there's the RFC, which defines all the features that a webdev can have, blog, whatever. PEP268, which expects you get devlib into Python. There's the URL for plip44 and the URL for Enfold repository if you're interested in it. And so that was it. Thanks for Enfold Systems, for Mac Hammond, which helped a lot with the devlib improvements and lots of guruness. And ZOAP Europe, which helped fund the Marshall product, and which is expected to land in Plon at some time. And to ZOAP Mac, which helped me review the article. And it's available for free in the issue 9 of ZOAP Mac. So if anyone has questions, I'm open for questions. You want to know one more? Okay.
question?
Yes, it's one of the things that we must make sure is that Web Dev in itself works correctly with. Okay. Okay. So, for sure, one of the things is that we may need to make Web Dev work correctly with other clients as well. Not just rich clients which can expect additional properties, but existing like WebAssembly and so on. So there's a couple of issues which we had with Zope that are not solved yet. Like for example, if you upload a very big file, Zope will try to load up the whole file as a string, and it may end up eating our memory on the server. So that's one thing, and I talked to Chris McDonald today, and he has also noticed this, and we hope to fix it. And another thing is writing some kind of functional tests for Web Dev, which if you use the TCP, what's the name? TCP Watch, and it's a small library from Shane Hathaway, which you can record requests between a dev client and a dev server, and then using these files, you can replay the interaction and make sure that the client and the server follow the spec correctly. So I think that most of the problems we had to OXTEN and Web Dev are given the fact that OXTEN does not follow the spec as much as it should. So that's what I think is the problem is. Of course, we can make the server adapt to a broken spec, but that's not desired and leads to an infinite row of maintenance and burden and all of that. Anyone has more questions?
So you talked about like integrating this Web Dev stuff with proprietary clients. Okay, fine with OS 10. OS 10 will pick up open source solutions. What about Microsoft?
Right.
What I mean is like once you extend the Web Dev protocol in certain ways, you have to make sure that it gets widespread usage. Otherwise, it's useless again.
Exactly. So in your product, we haven't extended the Web Dev protocol itself. What we did was to take advantage of a feature on Web Dev, which is having multiple namespaces on Profine response. When you ask for a Profine, Web Dev is allowed to return properties in different namespaces. So we extended Zope to add new namespaces, exposing more information that you have by default, and this completely follows the spec. So any Web Dev client that, for example, can display those additional namespaces and properties can use this.
May I ask another question? Yes. What's actually, where's the, advantage of using Web Dev instead of defining your own protocol over XML RPC or other means and then implement this? Is it just because there are Web Dev clients around already that this protocol seemed useful and that SOAP hasn't implemented? Because you could go over XML RPC and do your own stuff.
Yes, exactly. But XML RPC doesn't have as much features for dealing with folders, for example, or uploading and downloading files. It's much easier with Web Dev because you already have all those concepts of folders and files. And with XML RPC, you will have to have some kind of proxy that will fake folders and objects, and it's that's not what we desired.
I know, the infrastructure is there over WebDAV.
Yes, but exactly,
I mean,
the infrastructure.
You would have been more flexible, like redefining your own protocol over XML RPC, or just a new one.
Yes, I haven't seen any advantage on using XML RPC over WebDAV. And WebDAV, as I say, being a standard, can be any client that exists could make use of those features which we added. And you just have to say to them, okay, just follow the standard. We don't need to. You don't need to know anything about our project, and we don't need to give you a spec or anything because the spec is freely available everywhere, and so on. Anyone else?
Oh. Yeah, I have two questions. First one, you mentioned that you made some changes to the dev lib.
Yes.
So that you can upload a file in portions instead of all at once.
Well, not in portions, but you can have a callback function which is called at certain intervals. And using this callback function, you can, for example, interrupt the upload or get a better status overview of how the upload is going.
OK, so you still have the memory problem with eating up a lot of RAM when you upload a large file.
Oops, sorry?
You still have the problem with memory when you're uploading a large file.
Yes, we haven't solved that, because the problem is the SOAP itself, because it tries to read the file. The entire file in memory before doing anything with it.
Okay. And then the second question is, at one time you had a product called CMF CTR add-ons or something like that.
Oh.
And now you have something CTR extras. I'm just wondering if you could explain what those two products do.
Oh, so the other one? CTR add-ons, I think it was.
It's something in the collective, I don't remember.
Yes, so it's just the same product, just renamed it added the XML predicate, because the other name was too long.
Yeah, it was long. Okay, does it have any new functionality, new features?
Yes, it has the XML predicate, mm-hmm. And I think it's just the XML predicate.
Okay. I'm also curious, is it possible to upload an XBEL file, you know, bookmarks, XML formatted file into Zope using this product?
Yes, you could. It's just XML, right?
You could have, yeah.
So you can use the XML predicate to decide which content type you want to create, and then you will define a marshaller, which is specific to your format, and extract the information from the XML file and populate your object.
Great, thanks.
Infra has just released Railroad, which does solve the large file upload problem by just going around Zope. So if you're interested in large file uploads, come to the Railroad talk on Wednesday. We also have a new WebDAV client library written in Python, PyDAV client, I think we call it. Mm-hmm. So it may be interesting for people to look into that.
Yes, it's very interesting, and we are actually looking at the railroad just when you come back to the front of conference.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, here.
I know there will be a talk on it Wednesday when you're also going to speak a bit more about Plown Desktop, but what's this part got to do with Plown Desktop, or what is Plown Desktop extending on what you have presented here?
Okay, so Plown Desktop uses all of the stuff which I presented to get properties on objects, like for example the Dublin car metadata on CMF objects, and it shows you, how do you call that? Like a form in the Windows interface with fields that you can type in. So for example, you can change the title, the description, sale, publication, expiration date, and all those properties you have in the CMF object, and you click a button and it goes and makes the change in the server. And you can also have the context menu, which can go and change the workflow state for an object. So all the workflow state, the available states for a workflow, for an object, and all the properties and the type of those properties are exposed through WebDev, and the Plum desktop makes use of this information to build a UI, a dynamic UI, actually. It was? Okay. Oh, which one's going to answer? No more questions. Oops. Okay, so that's it. If you, any of you want to talk to me after the after this talk, I'm free for questions and what else. Thank you.